Welcome to the program. This is VOA's International Edition. It's Wednesday, August 23rd. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a magnitude 6.2 earthquake hits central Italy. President Obama is again comforter-in-chief.
We are heartbroken by the loss of life.
Just what is Russia's relationship with Iran? Donald Trump ramps up his attacks on Hillary Clinton. Also ahead, an American woman abandoned at birth finds herself. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, we are just learning that there has been a strong earthquake that struck central Italy early Wednesday near the town of Norcia. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, strong tremors woke up residents in the capital of Rome, some 170 kilometers from the epicenter of the quake. We do understand there are reports of damaged buildings and power outages, and we'll continue to follow and monitor the story and bring you more information as we get it. Well, with 76 days to go before Americans vote for a new president, Republican Donald Trump is wrapping up his attacks on Hillary Clinton. At a campaign stop in Ohio on Monday, Trump says he's calling for an independent special prosecutor to immediately investigate Hillary and Bill Clinton's foundation, saying the FBI can't be trusted to do the job. He alleges that big donors to the charitable foundation used it to get special access to Clinton and her top aides when she was Secretary of State.
The Clintons made the State Department into the same kind of pay-for-play operation as the Arkansas government was.
Newly released emails show that while some Clinton aides were asked for favors, there's no evidence that they were granted or that Clinton herself was involved. Appearing on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live on Monday, Clinton dismissed Trump's charges and lies, and she also jokingly addressed comments from Trump and his allies that she's having serious health issues.
Well, this has become one of their themes. Here, you take my pulse while I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Make sure I'm alive.
Oh, my God, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
Well, Clinton has been off the campaign trail for several days, concentrating her efforts on major fundraising events, meeting wealthy donors in Martha's Vineyard, a summer playground along the Atlantic Ocean in the northeastern state of Massachusetts. And on Tuesday, she attended a Los Angeles fundraising lunch hosted by pop singer Justin Timberlake and other prominent Hollywood figures. Now let's turn to what is trending online with G. Abby Lee. Hi, G. What's the buzz today?
Hi, Lori. The Rio Olympics has wrapped up, but U.S. swimmer Ryan Lochte is still suffering from the aftermath of his false accusations of being robbed in Brazil. Starting with Speedo yesterday, a total of four companies dropped his sponsorship. But unfortunately for him, there isn't very much online sympathy for Lochte.
Yeah, I think maybe his strategy of sort of just staying silent
didn't really work
didn't
out.
Didn't really pan out too well. He maybe should have just come forward right away and said, I made a mistake. But, you know, we see that all the time in politics.
That's right.
Let's move on to politics. What is happening there?
A whole lot. This time it involves GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump's wife, Melania Trump. She's taking legal action against UK-based Daily Mail and other media outlets for escort allegations. Her lawyer said notices were issued to the publications for making false and defamatory statements about her being an escort back in the 1990s. So that's before she married Trump.
Okay. Well, what about on the Democratic side? Any news there?
There has been allegations of Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton not being physically fit enough to be president. But on Monday night, she appeared on a talk show and denied those allegations. She also called them a quote-unquote wacky strategy by Trump. And in response to questions about her health, she opened a jar of pickles like a champ.
All right, I did see that. It was on the Jimmy Kimmel show, on the
That's
late show.
True.
And he said, let's see how strong you really are. And she opened it up, and it was quite humorous, actually.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's not the easiest thing to do sometimes.
Not always, no. Anything else trending?
Sure. American automotive company Tesla announced two new cars, and it's been trending on social media Tuesday afternoon. As you know, Tesla designs and manufactures electric cars. It's on Twitter at Tesla Motors and sent out this tweet Tuesday evening. Introducing P100D with ludicrous mode, more performance and range for Model S and Model X. More than 2,000 people liked that tweet within 2 hours.
What does ludicrous mode do?
Well, Lori, if you're a speed fanatic, I don't know if you are, you'll like this. The mode sends a four-door sedan from 0 to 60 miles per hour in 2.6 seconds flat. That's all for me today.
All right, thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G Abby Lee. We invite you also to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the other stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. imposes economic sanctions against sons of the African rebel leader. Muslim army chaplain seeks to bridge gaps between cultures. Dozens of wildfires still scorching the U.S. West. North Korea test fires a sub-launched missile. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues now. President Obama made his first trip Tuesday to the southeastern state of Louisiana, where historic flooding has ravaged much of the southern part of the state. The president reassured flood victims that his administration has made disaster recovery a top priority.
What I want the people of Louisiana to know is that you're not alone on this. Even after the TV cameras leave, the whole country is going to continue to support you and help you until we get folks back in their homes and lives are rebuilt.
Obama toured a flood-damaged neighborhood in East Baton Rouge Parish. The president has declared 20 of Louisiana's 64 parishes disaster areas, which streamlines the process of delivering federal aid. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, also known as FEMA, has said more than 115,000 people have applied for federal financial assistance. Vice President Joe Biden is meeting with the leaders of Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia during a visit there designed to show support to countries near Russia. And he's telling Baltic leaders to disregard Donald Trump's threats not to defend NATO allies.
And despite what you hear in this heated political season, there is a wide, deep, bipartisan commitment to NATO in my country. Don't listen to that other fellow. He knows not of what he speaks.
Biden is set to visit Turkey later today. The visit comes as Turkey is bombarding Islamic State targets and Syrian Kurdish forces in Syria. And with Syrian Kurdish forces backed by the U.S., the rising tensions are threatening to overshadow Biden's visit. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Since Monday, Turkish artillery has been shelling Islamic State forces in the Syrian border town of Jarabulus. Jarabulus is a key supply route for IS, the last remaining town under its control on the Turkish border. The bombardment follows the Turkish foreign minister's promise to eradicate IS from the border.
Daesh'ten de temizlenmesi gerekiyor.
We will cleanse the Syrian border of Daesh's presence, Mevlut Çavuşoğlu said. Daesh is another name for Islamic State. The foreign minister made the commitment following Saturday's suicide bombing of a Kurdish wedding in the Turkish city of Gaziantep. Initial reports blame IS. Turkey has been massing tanks on the Syrian border to offer support ahead of a widely predicted offensive to capture Jarabulus by the Turkish-backed Syrian Free Army forces. But Turkish artillery is also targeting Syrian Kurdish forces of the YPG in an action seen as seeking to thwart the rebel group's attempts to seize Jarabulus. The YPG makes up the vast majority of the Syrian Democratic Forces, which, backed by the US military, have inflicted a series of crushing defeats on IS. But Ankara accuses the Syrian Kurds of being terrorists linked to the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK. International relations expert Soli Özel of Istanbul's Kadir Has University says differences between Ankara and Washington over the Syrian Kurdish political party, the PYD, and its military wing, The YPG could dog Vice President Joseph Biden's visit to Ankara Wednesday.
I haven't seen anything that suggests that the Americans have stopped helping Turkey on the PKK. What Turkey is saying, well, look, PYD is a Syrian extension of the PKK, so you should also not help them. And that argument has been rejected by the Americans time and again and very consistently. So can they continue this game? I really have no idea. But that's why I said I think this issue is going to be one of the major issues on the agenda when Biden comes.
Ankara accuses the PYD of seeking to carve out an independent state on Turkey's border, which it fears will incite Turkey's own restive Kurdish minority. With US and UK special forces believed to be in the midst of the Syrian Kurdish forces as advisers, Washington will likely be seeking to defuse rising tensions. Biden's visit comes as Ankara is also reaching out to Tehran and Moscow. During his planned meeting with the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Biden is widely predicted to face intense pressure for Washington to abandon the Syrian Kurdish forces. Observers claim that is unlikely, given that they are viewed as the most effective force fighting the jihadists, especially with the key battle looming to capture Raqqa, Islamic State's self-declared capital. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Well, meanwhile, the United Nations aid chief warned Monday that Syria is the greatest humanitarian crisis of our time and a race against time to save hundreds of thousands of besieged citizens. And as the conflict continues, Russian warplanes last week carried out airstrikes in Syria from an Iranian base. The Russian Defense Ministry said the strikes targeted Islamic State militants. But whose side are Russia and Iran on? We're joined by Cameron Munter, CEO of and president of the East-West Institute. Thanks so much for being here, sir. What do you see as the goal of Iran's cooperation with Russia's efforts in Syria?
There's probably layers and layers in the relationship that we aren't privy to. But in general, I think it's an overarching goal of the Russians to make sure that they're seen as taken seriously throughout the region, that they're present throughout the region, and that they're recognized as being there throughout the region. So they're going to, I think, make it clear to the public, even at the risk maybe of ticking off the Iranians, that they have influence throughout the region. And, you know, whether or not that has a strategic goal, that is, whether they're better at fighting the rebels, whether that, you know, makes more of a difference, seems to me to be less important than the message that Russia's there, Russia's there to stay, and Russia has a wide reach.
Russia is there to stay to support the Assad regime. Russia's there to fight ISIS. What do you believe Russia is looking to gain?
I think it's a broader question than that. Where certainly they're supporting the Assad regime in the name of what they would call stability in the region. But I think it's a much broader thing. I think they, after many years of feeling, rightly or wrongly, that they were sidelined, they want to be taken seriously as players, not just in their own home region. They're not just a regional power, but they're a global power, and that they are a force to be reckoned with. I think that's what the longer-term interest is.
This past week, the child in the video from Syria has really become a symbol of this war. Do you think something like this could be a turning point to stopping this violence, or is this just another part of the media cycle that will go away and this nation will continue with this conflict?
I don't mean to sound cynical or cold or anything, because it's a heartrending picture, as other pictures in the past have been. But it's such a complex situation that, you know, if there were a simple move that could be made that would make a real difference, then perhaps a picture like this could prompt that. But I don't know that there is a simple move that someone could make looking at that picture. Let me give you an analogy of a time in history when a press report made a difference. There was a time at, in the 90s when in the Balkans, when there was an attack on a Sarajevo market that was very horrendous and was very well covered. And it spurred Americans to take action. But this was a time when American action was the only alternative. That is, it wasn't a complex situation. The Americans were the ones who had the power, and they could either act or not. And that event caused it to happen. We just don't have that binary situation in Syria right now. There is the ambiguity of who is fighting whom, what the role of the different armies are, who are the rebels in Syria, what the role of the Turkish forces are, what the role of the Kurdish forces are, what the role of the Russians are, the Iranians, the Hezbollah, the other people who are working there.
Where does the U.S. fit into all of this?
Well, the U.S. role, as I understand it, has been that U.S. air power is supporting those rebels, those non-Daesh rebels, against the government forces in Syria, while at the same time trying to degrade Daesh. And so those are two goals, sometimes compatible, sometimes incompatible. It makes it very difficult for the Americans to be the only ones who by themselves can solve the problem.
Do you think this situation even has the ability to be resolved?
Well, it does. I mean, any situation like this can be resolved, but it's a question of people making choices or being compelled to make choices. You know, it's a question of with whom do people ally themselves. Let's take an example. The choices made by the Turkish government have apparently changed over the last year, where there was a time when the government in Turkey was outspoken in its opposition to the Assad regime. And now, with its rapprochement with both Iran and with Russia, it seems possible or likely that the Turks have softened their non-compromising attitude towards Assad. People make choices because they see things change or they feel their own ability to affect things changes. And when the right constellation of change takes place, this war can be solved.
Cameron Munter, CEO of the East-West Institute, thanks so much. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The political party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there, reporting the latest developments.
Jim Malone, VOA News in Cleveland.
Catherine Gibson in Cleveland, VOA News.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. My next guest has quite the story. She started out in life as an abandoned baby. She was discovered as a newborn inside a brown paper bag left on a toilet seat in a Rochester, New York bar and grill restroom. A.K. Driggs has had quite the life, and she's written a fascinating book about her story, Abandoned in Search of Rainbows, chronicles her life. A.K., thanks for being here. Let's start from the beginning. What happened after you were discovered?
I wasn't adopted till I was almost, 2.5 years old. And when this loving couple, Betty and Bob, finally was able to adopt a little girl, back in the 1950s, of course, they said, well, she comes with a lot of issues. And all they could say was, we don't care what color she is, what issue she has, or where she came from or anything. We want her. But I did come with issues. And that stayed with me for quite a while.
Well,
you know?
I can imagine not knowing your identity would be a very difficult thing.
Yep. Sleepwalking, stuttering, fear to be left alone. I was a nursery school dropout because all I did was scream. I mean, it took me a long time, well into adulthood, to really acknowledge and figure out that, you know what, I have some abandonment issues that I need to work on. Mm. And, you know, my whole life growing up, even with this loving, wonderful family, was riddled with abandonment issues. I was bullied as a little kid by people in school. As I got older, all I wanted to do was make my family happy, my parents happy, and all they wanted to do was make me happy. And it was a very interesting thing. And coming from this, betrayal was a big part of things that happened in my life. You know, abandonment takes many forms, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
And you can abandon yourself. You know, finding happiness in a fractured world is the core essence of what this book is about. And it doesn't matter what tragedies we've been through, you know.
How was it with your parents? Obviously, it sounds like they loved you unconditionally.
They did. They loved me unconditionally. And they knew from the time I was a little girl that I wanted to be a singer. You know, my mommy taught me how to sing when I was little. And all I did was go in the backyard and sing to the frogs and the birds and the pollywogs and the bees and the butterflies. And what was interesting was when I sang, everything stopped. The animals would get very calm. They'd come in around me. The squirrels would come around me, the deer. And my mother would look at this from the window and go, well, Bob, you got to come and see this. Something happens when Kim sings. And as I got older, it continued. And so we learned that I had a gift with my voice. And so I wanted to be a singer. And that was my goal in life. And all I'll say is read the book, Abandoned in Search of Rainbows, and you will be blown away at the level of abandonment and betrayal that went through the entire musical career of becoming a recording artist, and how I even abandoned myself for a while.
Did you ever feel like you wanted to find out who your mother was?
You know, when I was little, when I was growing up, because I looked very different, back in the day they used to try to match you up, and they had adopted a boy prior to me 7 years earlier, and they matched up the eye color and the hair. But I looked very different. I looked very Greek or Italian, and I didn't look like my parents. So I would go to my mother and say, Mom, and she goes, honey, I don't know what you are. I didn't care about wanting to know who my mother was as much as I did my nationality. But my adopted mom, who is my mom to me, took me down to the library one day, and we looked up an article. And in the book is a copy of the article. And all I can tell you without giving too much away is one day my mother and dad opened up the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle newspaper, and there was a big splash on the front page of Section B. Whose foundling child, abandoned in washroom, seeks solace in the arms of Nurse Ruth Lyon? Baby cries lustily at Genesee Hospital. And Mom goes, Bob, look at this. Here's a little girl who needs a home. Why can't we have her? 2.5 years later, guess who they ended up with? So my life story is extremely sizzling, very compelling. There's a lot of spirituality through it that you're just going to go, you got to be kidding, that really couldn't have happened. And it did. Even touching on breast cancer and, you know, what we go through as survivors and caregivers and trying to find your true love than you think you do, and the loss of your love, and holding on to your dream, and what makes you happy? What is it that thrills you? How do we overcome adversity? How do we overcome hopelessness?
What have you learned about finding happiness? What do you say to people that are struggling?
One of the things I say to them is, identify what it is that truly makes you happy. What thrills you? Is it singing? Is it playing the piano? Is it cooking? What is it that is your thing, that when you do it, you feel that tingly happiness in all your cells? And when you identify that, do it. It doesn't have to be the way you make your living, because not all of us can make a living at what we love. But it doesn't mean you can't do it. For me, it was singing. Open your mouth and sing. And so I go to the Humane Society, and I go back into the cages, and I sing with the animals. If you can identify what really thrills you and put that into your life, it really does help get through those bad times. Because when you are doing what you really love and you can feel that tingly feeling, you know what's happening to your body? It's healing itself. You know what's happening to your mind? It's healing it. You know what's happening to your soul? It's healing that too.
All right. Well, very inspiring. A.K. Driggs, the book is called Abandoned in Search of Rainbows. Thanks so much. Well, virtual reality, or VR, has exploded into the consumer market this year. People can buy a headset, and with a smartphone, they can watch VR content. There are even regular feature films that you can watch in a virtual movie theater. But consumers will have to wait a little longer for a fully immersive, full-length movie in virtual reality. VOA's Elizabeth Lee explains why.
Lucas Wilson loves new technology that allows him to be creative.
I have a love of shiny objects.
That's why he's now producing content in virtual reality.
Every director that I talk to, every creative that I talk to wants to do virtual reality because it's new and it's cool. And it's cool.
But it may be a while before consumers will see a full movie. Wilson says there are a couple of reasons for that. First, viewing technology is still in its infancy.
Just looking through those lenses looking through those optics for more than about 15 or 20 minutes, you start to feel the eye strain, so you need to take a break.
He also says making virtual reality content is expensive, and companies are just beginning to figure out how to get consumers to pay for it. Some people say there's also the artistic challenge of telling a story in a full-length film, in which viewers have the freedom to look everywhere.
I don't think anybody knows if storytelling is appropriate yet. I think that until some attempts are made and we find out what the consumers want to watch, I don't think we'll know.
Until filmmakers start experimenting, Wilson says a 360-degree canvas allows directors more freedom.
It actually enhances creative ability if you want to look at it that way. They're not limited by a 16:9 frame anymore. You know, what happens is maybe for the first 10 or 15 seconds when someone puts on a VR headset, they're doing this and they're looking all over the place. But then after a while, they focus because that's how you're physiologically wired.
Wilson says traditional filmmaking techniques such as lighting and framing are still relevant, but there is the additional tool of using high-tech sound technology such as Dolby Atmos to tell the story.
If you're in a headset and there's a sound that happens behind you, a loud sound that happens behind you, your limbic system does not allow you to not turn around. You have to turn around. So that all of a sudden whips your focus somewhere else in the frame, and that can be a storytelling technique.
Oh, what's up, T?
How's everything? Good to see you, man.
Wilson says a storyteller's goal is to communicate emotion and connect with the audience. He says the best way to achieve that is to immerse viewers in that environment. With virtual reality, that is now possible. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thank you for being with us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Senior officials from the U.S. Embassy in Vientiane and U.S. Pacific Command, or USPACOM, met in Honolulu with senior officials from the Lao Ministry of National Defense for the 11th Lao-United States Bilateral Defense Dialogue. Brigadier General Khinchan Nantalasi, Director of Foreign Relations Department, Ministry of National Defense, and Brigadier General Mark Gillette, Deputy Director of USPACOM Directorate for Strategic Plans and Policy, led the meeting. Over 30 Lao and U.S. delegates participated in the event, including representatives from the Lao Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Defense Security Cooperation Agency in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Daniel Clune noted in his opening remarks the significant expansion of bilateral military cooperation in recent years and the positive impact it is having on the overall U.S.-Lao relationship. The Bilateral Defense Dialogue is a forum for bilateral consultations between the Lao Ministry of National Defense and U.S. Pacific Command to strengthen bilateral and multilateral cooperation, as well as develop defense cooperation programs that enhance relations between our security forces, encourage greater regional military cooperation, and promote the common interests of both countries. Primary topics of the dialogue included military-medical cooperation, civil-military operations to include cooperation on humanitarian unexploded ordnance removal and disaster relief, training and education opportunities to include English language training and professional military education, and Lao People's Army participation in regional conferences, workshops, and senior-level meetings. The United States is proud to work with its partner Laos for the benefit of both nations and the Asia-Pacific region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.